Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Christian, and I pray to Jesus Christ our Savior, and I've been doing it for many years.
We pray for President-elect Barack Obama. Bless us so that we might follow and we might truly make the time when your kingdom might come here on earth.
Make no mistake, as someone who used to teach constitutional law, I believe deeply in separation of church and state.
The walls between Christians and Muslims and Jews cannot stand. These now are the walls we must tear down.
It was interesting how religion played such a big part in this presidential election, and not in the way it usually does. It usually does swirling around a number of social and moral issues like abortion and marriage. Those were certainly there, but religion had a different facet in this presidential election. And in particular, the religion of now President-elect Barack Obama came under some very tight scrutiny late in the election. His church membership, his former pastor, black liberation theology. We're going to try for the next hour of Issues Etc. to sort fact from fiction and to, as best as we can, delve into the religious background of President-elect Barack Obama with Dr. Martin Noland. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon, November the 7th. Feel free to join us. We're going to be talking about President-elect Barack Obama's religious background, and we do want to hear from you, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E, or email us right here in the studio. It's Friday, November the 7th, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Martin Noland is a regular guest. He joins us here in the studio. He's past director of the Concordia Historical Institute, and he received his PhD from Union Theological Seminary in New York. Marty, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Marty, some say, and we need to dispel this almost immediately, some say that President-elect Obama's religious background is in fact Muslim. Is there any reason to believe that?
There's no reason to believe that. Everything that I've read on the subject, everything I've heard from him indicates that he is not a Muslim in any way that you can define that term, either the Arab types of Muslims or the black Muslims that are here in the United States. He is not a Muslim.
We're going to be talking about the religious left, and we're going to be talking about black liberation theology, a rather small subset of that. But you became familiar with both of these things, the religious left and black liberation theology, when you were spending time working on your PhD at Union Theological Seminary. Tell us about your experience there.
I attended Union Seminary in New York in order to receive a PhD in church history, and it turned out to be a good place to do that. My advisor was particularly expertise in my areas of study, but the, would you say, unexpected a consequence of studying there was that I found out by living there and talking to students, attending other courses than church history, that it was really the center of the religious left in the United States. And Union Theological Seminary is not a denominational seminary. It started out as Presbyterian many years ago, but in the controversy over historical criticism, it broke, and this was back in the 1920s, became independent, and then became a sort of a feeder school for intellectuals into all of the mainline denominations, which we would call liberal Protestant denominations. And so today, and that includes when I was there, which was in the late 1980s, It is kind of on the cutting edge of a lot of the issues of the religious left and exerts a lot of influence in many ways, often in the background, and sometimes that's what they prefer. But if you want to go to a place and figure out what is the religious left doing, what's it talking about, what's its agenda, Union Seminary is a good place to go and find that out.
Was the topic of conversation either in the classroom or elsewhere among the students studying there ever Black liberation theology?
Black liberation theology, all types of liberation theology, was the constant source of conversation. And so the anybody that is a minority, and this would not necessarily just be in the United States, oppressed peoples around the world, third world liberation theology, all these things were the main thing I think that most of the students were interested in, and maybe when I was there, maybe about half of the faculty were really into this. And the other half of the faculty there were really scholars of the traditional liberal Protestant persuasion. But I'd say about half of them were really of this liberation theology type. And that also includes the issues of the feminists who have adopted liberation theology and a few of the gay people that have adopted a gay liberation mode.
So what is the relationship between Union Seminary and our topic today, the religious background of President-elect Obama?
President-elect Obama was a member at Jeremiah Wright's Church in Chicago. It's Trinity United Church of Christ. And Jeremiah Wright, who now I believe is retired, if I'm correct on that, but Jeremiah Wright cites as one of his major influences in his theology, the theology of James Cone, who was, he's still teaching there at Union Theological Seminary. James Cone is probably the leading Black liberation Christian theologist in the United States. And I even happened to work on his computer because I was the computer technician for a couple of years, and his computer broke down and I walked into his office, and James Cone is a nice guy. You know, you go out for a beer and talk lots of things with him, but he is the leader of this. And so if you want to trace, if Obama has taken his religion seriously, that he would have imbibed for a number of years at Pastor Wright's church, then James Cone is the theologian to study to understand what's behind his thinking.
So the theologian behind the pastor that
right.
was Barack Obama's pastor for 20 years at Trinity UCC is, in fact, James Cone, and that's the connection to Union.
Right, exactly.
Okay, a brief lesson, if you would, on liberation theology and Black liberation theology. How would you summarize it?
You start with liberation theology, which in many of its ways is similar to what we call the social gospel, which arose in the 19th century, and it said that Jesus came to earth to improve the living conditions and social relations in society, and that he did not come to earth in order to promise a future heaven. So they reject many of the traditional doctrines such as atonement and the whole notion of eternal life and resurrection. It's all kind of fuzzy for the social gospel. So the real gospel, the real message for social gospelists in the 19th century was peace, world peace, social justice within nations and between races and things like that. In the 20th century, and pretty much this starts after, this would be post-war, after World War II, the people that are in the position of being oppressed or minority, they realize that social gospel has not really benefited them too much, that it's really turned out to be more rhetoric than real action and real change in their life. You know, they're still waiting, as it were, for their kingdom to come. So the liberation theologians, there's a number of places where it starts, including South America, they say, well, the elites, the people in power who are social gospelists have failed us. And therefore, it is clear that in order for the liberation to actually take place, it has to start from the bottom up. It has to start with the people themselves. So if you have what we're talking about today, about Black liberation theology, the liberation and the advancement of rights and the insurance of rights of the blacks has to come from the black people and their own organization themselves. Some people have accused liberation theology being Marxist, and there are some liberation theologians that are Marxist. I'm not sure that every one of them are, and I'm not sure that James Cone in particular is Marxist. But there are some similar themes, and so that's why they're often confused or brought together.
Okay, so in essence, what we have here is in liberation theology and black liberation theology in particular, a theology that relocates the good news of the gospel from the saving work of Jesus Christ, although it may include that, from that particular event in history to the liberation, economic, political, and social liberation of oppressed peoples, whatever those peoples may be, and in this case, black people.
That's correct. But you have to realize that this has been the message of liberal Protestantism since the 19th century in America, and it actually goes all the way back to the writings of Immanuel Kant in his ethical writings, in which he talks about the kingdom of God, which Jesus talks about is the kingdom of God here on earth, which tries to achieve social justice. And Schleiermacher and Hegel and all the great philosophical and theological figures of the 19th century, they all push this, and that is liberal Protestantism. It's just who is the people that are organizing and doing it. What's different for liberationists is it's the oppressed people themselves that are trying to achieve the social justice.
I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. Live this Friday afternoon, November the 7th. In studio with us, Dr. Martin Noland will respond to your questions or your comments about black liberation theology and the religious background of President-elect Barack Obama. Give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address on this Friday afternoon, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Martin Noland is past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. He received his PhD from Union Seminary in New York.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for next year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2009. Simply go to the sponsors page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. Thanks for your support.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology. Issuesetc.org.
A lot of us across this country are really thankful to be hearing your voices again.
Dr. Albert Moeller, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, with his thoughts on the return of Issues Etc.
It's great to be with you guys on Issues Etc. Welcome back. A lot of us across this country are really thankful to be hearing your voices again. It's always great to be with you guys.
We're talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at www.issuesetc.org.
If you're not going to talk about theology in context, if you're not going to talk about liberation theology that came out of the 60s, systematized black liberation theology that started with Jim Cone in 1968, and the writings of Cone and the writings of Dwight Hopkins and the writings of womanist theologians and Asian theologians and Hispanic theologians.
Reverend, I gotta get
talk,
this in.
Then you can't talk
wanna,
about the black values. Do you know liberation theology, sir?
I actually studied.
I think in whatever church you join, there are going to be things that the pastor says that you don't agree with. Not all of them may be as offensive as some of the statements that my former pastor made, and which I thoroughly rejected.
The voices of the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, formerly of Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago, and President-elect Barack Obama's past pastor. We're talking about the background of President-elect Barack Obama in terms of religious views. Our guest, Dr. Martin Noland, email us here on this Friday, November the 7th, talkback at issuesetc.org, or give us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Now, Trinity in Chicago is a member congregation of the United Church of Christ. It's a very large, liberal Protestant denomination. How liberal is it, Marty?
It's big. It's, first off, it's 8,000 members. So that's
member congregations.
Yeah.
The congregation itself.
At Trinity, yeah. Trinity in Chicago. United Church of Christ is, and this is what the people at Union would say. It's not just my analysis. It's the most, they would say it's the most progressive by the standards we would say. It's the most left-wing of all the mainline denominations in the United States. And several things that you could use to say this would be it blesses homosexual unions, ordains gay and lesbian pastors, and promotes the gay agenda openly. It was the first mainline denomination that really opened its doors to the gay people. The radical feminists, that's a different thing, feel most at home in the United Church of Christ, and they have a strong voice there. And radical feminists that feel that the UCC is too conservative, then they leave the Christian church entirely. And there were several students I remember talking just about this, and they said, when we get ordained, well, should we go to UCC, or is that too conservative for us? The UCC also harbors many liberation theologians and activists of various types. And Jeremiah Wright is the most visible of those pastors in the Chicago area.
We need to permit as a possibility that Barack Obama, while during his time in Chicago and then serving as U.S. Senator, was doing what a lot of politicians do when they make their choice for church membership. They were choosing the church that either fit their political views or the one that was the place to be seen on Sunday morning. Is that a real possibility here?
Yeah, that's a real possibility. And we should grant the president-elect that that would very much a possibility. So everything we say here has to be bracketed by that understanding. There's a good book out recently by Stephen Mansfield called The Faith of Barack Obama. And he tries to investigate what attracted Obama to Trinity United Church of Christ. And these are the points that he brings out: the social activism, the ministry to the poor, the celebration of African American heritage, lively worship services, a sense of community, and this, I think, is the most important one, theological justification for Barack Obama's political liberalism. So Obama may not buy into the theology of Jeremiah Wright, but he sees in Jeremiah Wright and that church a theological justification for his type of politics.
If President-elect Obama believes and adheres to liberation theology, what kind of impact do you think that President Obama has on American religion in general?
It's hard. I mean, now you're asking an issue of prophecy. You know, what is he going to do? This is a question anybody asks about what is the next president going to do, especially if he's never been in that particular office before. You can't really predict that because what people do in campaigns is often different what they do in office. We'll find out in the next year when he starts appointing people to various offices and cabinets and begins doing policy things. And another here, I think, is irony, is that liberation theology, if it's organized from the bottom up, how does it work if it's coming from the top down? So really, I think that at that point, you're going to say he's not going to be a liberation theologian, but he does clearly agree with the theology and politics of the religious left or the liberal Protestants.
And how would you define that again, as not to paint with a broad brush, equating the religious left with black liberation theology or liberation theology?
Exactly.
How would you distinguish the religious left?
The religious left has, in general, the issues of social justice, and that's done within the national level, world peace, which is done on an international level, and also probably since the 1970s, a big concern for the environment. Those are the three big things that they always talk about all the time. So you can expect those to be issues that inform the president-elect's decision-making and the people that he appoints.
Does liberation theology accept a separation of church and state?
I would think so. That depends on the liberation theologian that you talk to, though. It's clear in many cases where liberation theology has gone into effect that it doesn't see any difference. It sees the church as a agent of God, and they may not define God as you and I do, but an agent of God to work out his will in society, and the church can be involved in politics on the bottom and the top and the side in any way, shape, and form.
Would it be fair to say that they would be wary of the state's involvement in the church's affairs, but they really are kind of like a lot of American evangelicals, far more permissive in the idea that the church would be involved in the affairs of state, except in an entirely different direction?
Well, yeah, this is where the whole thing gets very interesting now, because the religious right was for a long time trying to intrude into the state, the government of the state, the laws of the state, religious values and moral values, of course, but also some specifically religious values, or you could say moral values with religious justification. Now the religious left has that opportunity to do the same thing. And so the religious right can't say, oh, naughty boy, separation of church and state. Well, guess who's been doing that for the last 20 years? What's different is that the religious right is mostly made up of people that believe in a conservative or traditional Protestant view, and also a good number of conservative Catholics. The religious left is made up of a diversity of people, and that includes probably Jewish people and other people of a variety of religions and not just Christian, but they buy into the ideas of liberal Protestantism, again, social justice, world peace, and the environment, and also some more specific issues like gay rights.
So what kind of effect would a President Obama have on social issues?
He has the ability to affect things according to what he's allowed to do as a president. You know, we have a constitution that restricts what the president can do. It's not like he is a king, and whatever the king says goes. And I believe the Congress is overwhelmingly Democratic. So this is what will be interesting, because now laws that pass, there won't be the challenge of a conflict between two different philosophies. You know, they're pretty much along the same philosophy within the Democratic Party. So I think what you'll see now is differences that arise within the Democratic Party itself. Some members of the Democratic Party are definitely non-religious. They don't want religion in the governmental marketplace. The religious left does want religion in government in a variety of ways. But their definition of religion, as I said, centers around social justice. So we'll see how that works out. But I think what you'll see is, at the very least, more talk about religion, more talk about values and ethics and social justice. That will be a lot more on the rhetoric, and that does tend to influence where things go.
Well, with only about 30 seconds then, do you think that people, that the American public will be more or less comfortable with a president in the White House who is decidedly from the religious left than they have been with the president in the White House who's at least perceived as being associated with the religious right? Where do you think the American people will fall on that? 30 seconds.
the Democrats moved in this direction because they did a lot of polling and found that the Americans generally trust a leader who has religion of whatever type. But if he is a man of faith, the people have more confidence in him as opposed to somebody that renounces the faith or is agnostic. So I think that generally the American people will be just as happy or just as unhappy with the president on this particular issue. That is his expression of faith and its values.
Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. We're talking about the religious background of President-elect Obama. I know you've got thoughts on this, and I do want to hear from you on the religious background of President-elect Barack Obama. It's Friday afternoon, November the 7th. Call or email us during this break. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, or TalkBack at IssuesETC.org, TalkBack@IssuesETC.org. When we come back, we've touched upon this just a little bit, but I'm curious about the effect of Obama's election on the religious right. Not only being perceived as politically in the minority, but the religious right has enjoyed a lot of influence in American society and politics in the last 30 years. I don't think that era is over, but perhaps we'll see a greater influence of religious left. Perhaps we'll get to meet the religious left for the first time. We'll also talk about Obama's election and its effect on the religious left after this.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Genesis account, is it myth or history?
Answers with Ken Ham, a well-known Bible conference speaker on the book of Genesis.
Can a person be a Christian and believe that the Genesis account of creation is only symbolic? Actually, believing it's symbolic doesn't necessarily affect their salvation, but they need to understand how inconsistent they are. You see, if Christians don't accept Genesis as literal history, they've actually destroyed the foundation of the gospel they believe in. Ultimately, all Christian doctrine, directly or indirectly, is founded in the book of Genesis. The doctrines of marriage, clothing, and sin are dependent upon the literal events of Genesis. The prediction of a Redeemer coming to earth is in Genesis chapter 3. If Christians don't accept Genesis as literal history, they have no basis for their faith. When we understand the salvation message about Jesus Christ coming as a babe in a manger to die on a cross for our sin, being raised from the dead so we can spend eternity with him, this is all true because of the events of Genesis. Satan knows that to destroy the book of Genesis is to destroy the foundational book of the Bible.
Some people scoff and say there never was a Tower of Babel as recorded in Genesis. Well, we encourage you to get a sample copy of our Answers magazine about this account and how all the different people groups today originate from that event. Today's the last day we're offering this sample magazine. Call toll-free 888-89-ANSWERS and offer a gift of any amount. 888-89-ANSWERS.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Jesus was a poor black man who lived in a country and who lived in a culture that was controlled by rich white people. It just came to me within the past few weeks, y'all, why so many folk are hating on Barack Obama. He ain't white, he ain't rich, and he ain't privileged. Barack knows what it means to be a black man living in a country and a culture that is controlled by rich white people.
Again, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, formerly of Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago, where for 20 years Barack Obama and his family were members and attended. Now, the president-elect has pointed out that his attendance there and his membership there was, his attendance was sporadic there. He may not have heard every sermon that was preached by Jeremiah Wright, but that was from one of them. We're talking about the religious background of President-elect Barack Obama. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. So far, we've talked a little bit about the epicenter of black liberation theology in the United States, Union Theological Seminary, where Dr. Noland earned a Ph.D., and we've talked about the influence from Cone, who teaches at Union Theological Seminary, upon Jeremiah Wright, and then therefore perhaps on Barack Obama. It is a possibility that Barack Obama was a member at Trinity for the reason many other politicians are members at their churches, but we don't know. Black liberation theology substitutes a social gospel for the true gospel. That's where my next question lies here, Dr. Noland. The biblical gospel is that Jesus Christ took on human flesh in order to save a fallen humanity, lived a perfect life as the substitute for that fallen humanity, laid down that life in sacrifice at the cross, and that sacrifice was accepted by God his Father in the resurrection. Therefore, we now have forgiveness of life, a forgiveness of sins, life, and salvation in Christ's name. That's, in a nutshell, the biblical gospel. What is the gospel of liberation theology?
Again, the liberation theology, its gospel or central message is the desire and movement and achievement of someday social justice. And this is something, of course, the way human beings, the way they are, it's always partial. The next generation has to regenerate it. And eventually, social justice, if it's achieved in one country, can be imported around the world. So there can be international aspects of this. And I think that some of the thinking behind, for example, the United Nations was based on not on liberation theology, but on social gospel thinking. The idea that the rights that were achieved by people in the United States and Western countries could be imported to other places in the world through some of the cultural things of the United Nations. But that's the main thing. It's social, it's peace, justice, and the environment. That's the motto that the liberationists always talk about. And the difference between them and the old social gospelists is that the liberationists say that the people that are under oppression, and as Pastor Wright said, those that have felt the pain themselves, they're the ones that have to be doing the work. Otherwise, it doesn't get done.
Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. And our in-studio email address this Friday afternoon, talkback@issuesetc.org. Tim is calling from his car. Tim, thanks for waiting.
How you doing, sir?
Very well.
I think your guest hit up on some very strident points. I think it's very, very interesting, too. I think that even though Mr. Obama tried to distance himself from Jeremiah Wright, I think that the public got wind of what he was preaching, and I think that had a great deal to do with blending right into his liberal ideology, where everybody can be love and peace, and we can all join together, and nobody has to have any strife. I think all of that just kind of was a storm that Mr. Obama just jumped right in and used to whip up America's emotions about.
That's very interesting. Thank you very much, Tim, and thanks for calling. Do you think that Jeremiah Wright served as a foil for Senator Obama at the time?
That's hard to tell. You don't ever know how these things go, and I think the real question is how closely were the pastor and the president-elect working together, and I don't think there's any evidence of that, as I think most people have recognized that the president-elect's membership at that church was simply as a member and not as a cohort, you might say, in the leadership there. But where I think this is important is to say that the president-elect had a choice in making a decision which church he would belong to. And everybody makes those decisions, and they're not inconsequential decisions. You know, husbands and wives, when they first get married, often will have long debates if they come from a different religious background about what church they're going to. And sometimes they're not settled for years. So, you know, these are consequential decisions for every family. And when you finally settle on a church, there's usually a number of good reasons why you choose that. And it could be that the president-elect chose Wright's Church simply because it was a very large church and that his theology kind of was close to the politics that Obama was attracted to. And I think that we can say at least. To say beyond that, I think we have to find out what the president intends to do with his position and what he says in the future about these things.
Here's Andy in Kirkwood, Missouri. Andy, welcome.
Hi, Todd. You know, if we tweak that three-point program, we could make it peace, justice, and the American way and be on the lookout for Superman, couldn't we? I'm wondering, peace and justice and taking care of the environment are all good things, things we can't, even as conservative Christians, say that we're not in favor of. Where should we be careful to draw the line?
Thank you very much, Andy. It's a great question. Dr. Nolan.
Well, the question is where you stand on the scale of things as a liberationist. There are some liberationists that would say activism, like what Obama did, involved in community organization at the street level, you know, getting people together and dealing with their problems, helping organize them. And that's a very basic thing, and everybody has a right to do that in this country. There's others that would say, well, no, we got to take up the next level and be involved in politics, you know, in party politics, partisan politics. And you have a right to do that, too. It's clear now that the religious left has been successful in doing that. And by the way, the religious left kind of was out of existence for a while when the religious right took over. And the reason that happened is that in the 60s and early 70s, the Democratic Party really distanced itself from religious discourse. Before that, often presidents and senators and stuff, they often talked about God. The Democratic Party, because of a number of cultural changes in the 60s, decided to put God on the side. And what happened is the Republicans said, wait a sec, most of the people in the United States, 80% of them, are really concerned about their religion. We need to keep that in our discourse. And that was the way I think the religious right brought so many people into their camp. The religious left realized in the last 6, 7, 8 years what had happened. And so they've decided, no, we've got to include religious discourse and values in our discussion. Of course, it's going to be our values in discussion, but it will be religious. And I think that's what's happened. And now we're seeing the product of that with the Congress and the president to be.
Tim, a previous caller, raised a very interesting possibility, and that is the emotional rhetoric that we heard from Jeremiah Wright. Of course, not all of it's at that pitch, but the emotional rhetoric that we heard in Wright's church. Do you think that Barack Obama has kind of picked up on that in an emotional rhetoric that, in Tim's word, kind of fired up the people who were supporting him for his political agenda?
Well, first off, the black preacher knows how to preach. He is always, almost always, an emotional preacher, and they're very effective preachers. I can tell you because I went to many of those churches in New York City when I was there and heard many of the speakers. They know how to use speech to accomplish what a speaker wants to do. So if you want to say that he learned some things about rhetoric by listening to that pastor in Chicago, you could say that.
But and the emotional effect, the emotional impact of that rhetoric?
Yeah, but it's part of the way that any African-American person that grows up in a Christian church, certainly, of whatever type, left or right, they're going to hear that type of discourse. And that's what they're used to. You know, the more intellectual, like we have in our Lutheran pulpits, you know, it's a kind of a quiet discourse on the Bible and what does this say and how does it apply to you, you know, tends to be very logical. The African-American walks into that generally and says, whoa, this is, you know, well, I don't quite get it. You know, it's not preaching to them. So you have to understand that in their religious culture, that's the way that they communicate. So this is the way that the president-elect will, and I think is effectively communicated. And the other thing is, I think that's part of political discourse is to do that.
Okay, let's take a break right here. I want to pick up on that on the other side, because that's what many people have said. His great strength is his rhetoric, his ability to speak to a crowd and sway a crowd. 10 minutes left for your phone calls and your email on the religious background of President-elect Barack Obama. I do want to hear from you now, so call now during this break. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, the effect of President Obama on the religious right and the religious left. Stay tuned. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Issues Etc., Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org, click promote, and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly, issuesetc.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A new book shows how population control actually undermines human health worldwide.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
In 1967, Stanford entomologist Paul Ehrlich predicted that in the 1970s and 80s, hundreds of millions of people would starve to death due to a population explosion. While Ehrlich's dire predictions did not come true, his book was very influential. Now another book questions Ehrlich's premise. Population Control, Real Costs, Illusory Benefits by Stephen Mosier exposes how efforts to limit world population often lead to fanaticism and even cruelty. Tune in next time to hear more about this important work.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Oh, I am so glad that I got a God who knows what it is to be a poor black man in a country and a culture that is controlled by and run by rich white people. He taught me, Jesus did, how to love my enemies. Jesus taught me how to love the hell out of my enemies and not be reduced to their level of hatred, bigotry, and small-mindedness.
He is a well-regarded preacher and somebody who is known for talking about the social gospel, but most of the time when I'm in church, he's talking about Jesus, God, faith, values, caring for the poor, family. Those were the messages that I was hearing.
President-elect Barack Obama and his former pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, were talking about the religious background of President-elect Barack Obama. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. Let's talk about the impact of a President Obama on the religious right.
Well, this you'll probably have to talk to a political analyst that's an expert on these things. But my reading on this is that the Republicans are going to have to distance themselves from the religious right. It doesn't mean that the people that make up the religious right from a church perspective are going to stop what they're doing, and I don't think they should. But I think the Republican Party is going to look at, you know, what's happened here. Are they going to just blame the economy or the war in Iraq? I think they're also going to look at their connection to the religious right and say, you know, this was partially a lie. For the Republican Party to recapture what it wants to do as the center of American politics, it's going to have to do that, or at least reconfigure how it's connected to religion in America. So I think that's a very significant thing that's a result of this election.
So you think the political fortunes in influence of the religious right will decline during a Barack Obama presidency because of the political exigencies?
Yeah, I think that, in fact, in our area in St. Louis County, there are many offices where I could not find a Republican candidate to vote for. What does that tell me? You know, and instead there's the Democrats and the Libertarians and the Constitution Party. There are no Republicans up for office. It means that people that won office saying that's a liability and I don't want to go there. So the party and the masters of the party, they're going to make some changes, whatever that has to be.
What will the effect of a Obama presidency be on the religious left? About a minute here.
I don't necessarily see a connection between Obama and the religious left, but when you have this type of sea change in cultural issues, the religious left is going to use this as an opportunity to, you know, raise its stock in American society. So even if Obama doesn't do anything, doesn't appoint any particularly left-wing Supreme Court justices or anything else, the influence, it's an emotional thing that's going on in the country. The religious left will take advantage of that in many ways, and we'll also see the evangelicals, many of them, move to the left. And I think the emergent church is an example of that. They're at least moving to the center.
Okay, I want to talk about that briefly. How are American evangelicals, not mainline Protestant liberals, but American evangelicals moving left?
Well, it's very interesting that some of the so-called evangelicals in the evangelical left were invited by the Democrats to be involved in the making of the platform for this election. Jim Wallace in particular, and also Tony Campolo, which are well-known writers and people involved in the what's called the evangelical left. So the Democratic Party has embraced the main leaders in the evangelical left. And what these leaders did was, on the issue of abortion, per se, they said, well, they just kind of hedged everything. And so what I think is going to happen now with the success of that equation and that connection is you'll see people that were kind of leaning that way, they will move in that direction. And as I said before, the emergent church is maybe not everybody that's associated with that, but many of them are seeking a more left or at least a moderate view on politics than has been the case in the evangelical movement.
A couple things that I know you wanted to at least discuss briefly before our conversation winds down, and that is that in analysis of Barack Obama's particular religious beliefs, at least one author has noted that he believes that there are multiple paths to salvation.
Yeah, this is, again, from Stephen Mansfield in The Faith of Barack Obama, who notes on page 104 that Obama believes in many paths to God and salvation. It has to be said, though, that this is not different from many of the presidents of the United States who have either been deists or agnostics. So that isn't necessarily saying, oh, he's way out there. No, I think that's maybe even the norm for many presidents. It's a politically judicious path to take for the president, because he has to represent all the people of the United States.
Well, we should point out that it's almost a rule that presidents tend to govern very differently from the official positions of their chosen denominations.
Yeah, that's true. And so let's see, George W. Bush, who was affiliated with the religious right, was United Methodist. And they're one of the most liberal of the Protestant denominations, not as liberal as the United Church of Christ, but almost. So does that make any sense? Or Bill Clinton, who I believe was a member of the Southern Baptist Church, which is the center of the religious right, but, you know, that's not his politics. So, yes, often the president is at odds with his denomination.
You also wanted to talk about the fact that you perceive Barack Obama to, above all things, to view himself as a philosopher. What do you mean by that, and why is that important to understand a Barack Obama presidency?
I don't think that Barack Obama sees his role as being a preacher or a theologian. I see him as a political philosopher for the people. And this is very interesting, because if you go back in the beginning of philosophy. It goes to Plato, and the main writing is the Republic on the issue of justice. What is justice? And the one a guy that's arguing it says it's might makes right, and Plato's protagonist, who's Socrates, says, no, there's justice that is not always what might makes right, and there's it's its own ideal. And I think that Barack Obama is in a unique position because, as Wright says, that he's experienced the type of oppression and prejudice that most African Americans have experienced in our country. He understands the notion of justice probably better than most people and most presidents. And so I think that we may have an unusual opportunity in the next 4 years for discourse about ethics and justice, and that would be led by the president. I think that might be a good thing for our country.
Finally, with only a minute, what is fundamentally wrong with liberation theology? 1 minute.
The fundamental problem with liberation theology is it turns Jesus into revolutionary. It makes Jesus to be, as they would say, the man that has the option for the poor. It pits Jesus against rich people and anybody that isn't poor. Well, this is wrong. Jesus came to save all people of all faiths, of all races and of all whatever their income bracket or their power. This was not something that was on Jesus' agenda. When he said, blessed are the poor, he was indicating to them that God considers them, where the other religions did not. Martin Luther talks about blessed are the poor in spirit, meaning people that aren't connected emotionally to their goods. So the problem with liberation theology is it places God in among the poor and the oppressed people, and it really separates a society, as we can see with Jeremiah Wright. I think Barack Obama knows that, and he wants to unify society, and that is, a good goal, and we hope that he's able to accomplish some of that.
Folks, we have a great resource on Black Liberation Theology posted under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Dr. Martin Nolan is past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. He received a PhD from Union Seminary in New York. Marty, it's always a pleasure. I thank you for coming out here this afternoon and being our guest.
Thank you for inviting me.
Monday on the program, we're going to talk with Dr. Jeff Gibbs about hell. That's a good place to go. Earlier this week, it was Satan with Dr. Lewis Brighton. It's only natural that we would talk about hell next week. Dr. Jeff Gibbs will be our guest. The religious views of our leaders, our elected leaders, do make a difference. Now, they may make very little difference, but they do make a difference. And the theological associations that our elected leaders matter, don't they matter in your life? The church that you joined, did you join it just because your golf buddies sit next to you on Sunday morning, or because the girls that are in your Pilates class are there too? That's no reason to join a church. You really ought to believe what the preacher is saying when he says it to you, and if you don't, find a church where you do. So what we would hope is that the distortion of the gospel that is found in Black liberation theology and liberation theology, in fact, in the religious left in general, would not find its way into the White House. It has no place there. Our sincerest hope for this president, what is it? That he would rule justly and that God would endow him with his wisdom? That he would be supported by the American people, especially by Christians, in their prayers. And that whatever errors he may hold to theologically, and we'd have to pray this for all presidents, would not find their way into the White House or from his lips. Because false teaching is bad for everybody. And we would hope that his genuine faith would be set upon Jesus Christ. He says he believes in Jesus. I would hope that he does truly believe in Jesus Christ, the only Savior of all mankind. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again Monday. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.